This is Radio 3. Or for those of you with stereo...
This is Radio 1.5.
For the next program, we've just got time for a Radio 3 pause. And the particular pause we're going to play you is one we've had hundreds of requests for. It's part of the final 75 seconds of the embarrassing gap between last year's recital of the Corellia Suite by Sibelius and the Test Match commentary from Lords. And here it is. Well, I'm afraid we seem to be having some difficulty in bringing you that pause. So, in the meantime... This is the half-open university. There now follows Unit 1 in our series for Block 3 students on the Environmental Sciences degree course. The program is introduced by Professor Nigel Rees, Dr. Christopher Emmett, Dr. Timothy Davis, and Professor Christine Ozan. The first explanatory lecture covers the principles governing hydrostatics. Professor Einstein speaks first.
Hello, students. My name is Professor Einstein, Jim Einstein. That's no relation, of course, to my famous cousin Ethel Einstein, but enough of my relativity problems. Right. Are there any questions? Hello? Who? Arthur Springfield of Edinburgh? Yes, yes, all right, you may leave the room, but make it quick. Right. Well, while we're just waiting for Springfield to get back, I'd like to introduce my two assistants to you. Professor Frank Copernicus.
Hello.
And Dr. Fiona Faraday.
Hello.
Thank you. And now... Yes? Oh, right. Thank you. Well, Springfield's apparently back from the toilet. Which brings us to Archimedes' principle.
The weight of fluid displaced is equal to the upthrust.
Exactly. Now, if we all get out our little booklets, D106, and turn to page 159, we'll be wasting our time because the bit we want is on page 236. As you see, Archimedes discovered his principle in the bath in the 2nd century BC.
To help us understand more fully how science evolved in ancient Greece, I want you all to switch off your radio sets. Have you done that? Good. Now turn on your televisions to BBC Two for the following piece of film.
Hello, this is Raymond Baxtopoulos welcoming you to ancient Greece for another edition of Yesterday's World. And in tonight's program, we have a report from Troy on the new developments in synthetic horse technology, the latest on Apollo from Mount Olympus, and the revolution in labyrinth mining caused by the introduction of the Minotaur. But first, Archimedes, the scientist who is now a law unto himself. Archimedes is here to demonstrate his remarkable discovery.
I name this ship Argo.
No, no, Helen, not yet.
Oh, sorry.
Let me introduce Archimedes.
Hello, Euripides.
I don't think so.
Oh, I must have torn them sitting down.
Now, Archimedes, I believe that...
I'm terribly sorry. That's my dog. Achilles, heel.
Archimedes, getting back to your discovery.
I need this ship.
No, Helen, not yet. I'll tell you when. Go
sorry.
On, dear. I believe, Archimedes, your principle has something to do with water.
Yes, it's perfectly simple, really. You see, when a body is wholly or partly immersed in water, it becomes almost instantaneously much less arid in a hydroprogressive sort of direction.
You mean it gets wet?
Yes, that's it. It gets wet. Yes, Eureka, it gets wet.
No, Archimedes, we know it gets wet.
What? Oh, yes, so we do. The oracle told me only next Tuesday. Now, what was it? Excuse me, I shall have to get into my bath.
Yes, well...
Eureka, I found it. I
What?
The soap. Oh, Damocles, I've lost it again.
Archimedes.
Yes?
How are you getting on?
Oh, shan't be a minute. I've just got the feet to do, and then my...
No, the bath.
What? Oh, the bath! That's it! Eureka! The bath! I found it!
What?
The plug hole.
I name the ship Argo.
Look out, it's going into the bath.
I said not yet, Helen.
Oh, really? That's the thousandth time.
Archimedes, are you all right?
Oh, dear. I almost came Acropolis there, you know. Or as I said to the Gorgon the other day, stone me.
Could we have someone to clean up all this water on the floor, please?
Water on the floor? That's it! Eureka! Eureka! I found it! I really have found it!
What is it? What have you discovered?
Rising damp. Somebody fetch the mopilar and clean it up.
Well, that appears to be it for tonight. Next week, a report on the new tube trains from Orpheus in the underground. And the Cyclops will be half looking at Circe's new pig farm. Till then, good night.
Thank you. Background literature on the Yesterday's World series in the original Latin can be obtained from the half-open university's bookshop, priced at just a few pence.
Just one moment, Dr. Faraday. I see that Phillips of the Firth of Forth has only just switched on. Look, Phillips, I've warned you about being late for lectures before. Go and watch television for 15 minutes and take 405 lines. Oh, excuse me.
Letter for you, sir.
Oh, thank you. What? How dare you answer me back like that, Phillips? Take 625 lines instead. Yeah, that's right, BBC Two. Go on. At this point, we move on a little deeper into physics with Heisenberg's famous uncertainty principle.
Heisenberg's uncertainty principle states that... what it states is that
I hope you all made a note of that.
The thing is, you see, that it's tricky because the whole point really is that, I mean, it's quite tricky to say.
Exactly.
This is the Half Open University. That was Unit 5 of our very rough woolen underwear foundation course for students studying course foundations. And now follows Block 5, Unit 1, Pearl 1, Knit 2 Together and Cast Off for students on the inter-faculty course on kinetics, kinematics, and knitting. Professor Einstein speaks first.
Good evening. And first of all, we look at the law of gravity. A very serious subject indeed.
And now, dynamics. The moment of inertia.
And now, have you got biology book TSR2 ready? Good. Well, take its appendix out. Have you done that? Right. Now I want you all to turn to frogs.
The most economical way of doing this can be found in the current issue of Winch.
But for a more detailed report on frogs, Professor Einstein speaks first. The frog speaks second.
Hello again. Well, I'm speaking to you now on a recording I made several months ago out in the countryside. Here with me, I have a small fishing net and a multidimensional electron microscope, both of which you can purchase yourself for just a few pence. Now, here is our freshwater pond, and I think you'll be able to get a closer view of our friend the frog in just a minute. Ah, yes, here he comes. Look, he's just hopped over that clump of weeds, and here he is. Whoops-a-daisy, onto my hand.
Stop! Just 1 minute there. I'm sorry to interrupt you, common frog, but of course,
You thought you were coming along to this pond this evening to appear in a half-open university documentary. But in fact, we've got lots more surprises in store for you tonight. Tonight, Common Frog, inhabitant of most areas of Great Britain outside the Outer Hebrides and Orkneys, this is your life. Well, I know you weren't expecting any of this, but if you'll just perch back there on the bank and relax, we're going to look back over that four-year life cycle of yours. The year is 1970, and your father and mother are thrown together by the currents of the water. The couple mate there and then and produce a collection of frog spawn containing 2,500 eggs, which all hatch out 2 weeks later. Well, you haven't seen all your brothers and sisters since that first day you wriggled out of the jelly. But we've managed to round them all up, and here they all are. Well, I know that brings a tear to your eyes, and dreadful. Because you can probably remember what a narrow escape they had back in 1971 from a flock of hungry crows. Well, at great expense, we've managed to fly those crows 200 miles from Cornwall, and here they are tonight. And Common Frog, that was your life.
This is still the Half Open University. Taking part in that lecture were Professor Einstein of the Half Open University, Professor Common Frog of the Half-Filled Lily Pond, and Dr. Eamon Andrews of the Half-Witted Imbecile. Now, here's some information for listeners who are not members of the Half-Open University. Push off. In our course in human biology, Professor Einstein speaks first. Dr. Heinrich Fogelheimer speaks 17th, and Professor Hans Heimerfogel doesn't speak at all.
Good evening. Human biology. Stop sniggering, Perkins of the Upper Clyde. Now, first of all, I want to take medicine.
And while he's doing that, let's look at some of the advances in the field of medical science. First, anaesthetics.
Until the 18th century, when people wanted to have operations, the only way they could put them to sleep was by hitting them over the head with a very large mallet.
Then came the brilliant discovery of chloroform. For just a few pence, patients would use this and become totally anaesthetized. Then they could be hit over the head with a very large mallet without feeling any pain at all.
Let's just have a look at our own bodies now for a moment, shall we? I hope you've each got your skeleton. If not, you may fall behind. As well as forward, sideways, and all over the place. Now then, first of all, the arm. Roll up the skin as far as your elbow. That's it. And now, take your pulse. Good. And put it back again. Now, a little experiment with your insides. Just undo your abdomen and run your intestines through a bowl of water to see if there are any leaks. If they are, you'd better lay off liquids and eat as much chewing gum as possible.
Next, the bloodstream. Inside your blood are thousands of little germs, all constantly fighting for survival.
This is known as germ warfare.
Or the Cold War.
So, let us listen then to this recording taken inside the human bloodstream and magnified 3 million times.
Mein Gott! The enemy are approaching!
Silence! The German measles will never be defeated!
I'm sorry, but they are believed to be invading the bloodstream this very moment.
It is all in vain!
In vain! Very funny, mein Gott!
Be quiet! How many times do I have to tell you? The German measles is a serious disease. Our bacteria are capable of complete infection within 24 hours. Look how we annex the pancreas. Today, the lymph vessel. Tomorrow, the world!
Madam, Hans, on your Führer! On your Gelieb, der Führer!
Listen to those viruses out there.
But, mein Führer...
We are the mightiest disease on air, sea, and land. We will introduce compulsory prescription for the over-16s. We will... What's that noise?
All right, Measles, we know you're in there. This is the British artillery. Come on out with your temperature up and you won't get hurt.
You'll never get us alive, Britishers.
All right, if that's the way you want it, we're coming in.
Fiora, the blood cells are advancing on us from the stomach with their tummy guns.
Very well. We will show them. Prepare to launch headache attack.
Headache attack it is, Fiora.
The swines, they knew we weren't expecting that. Corpus.
Yes, Capsule?
Tell the men to prepare their advances with great care. This area is littered with dangerous spots, you know.
And if their missions do not succeed, sir?
Tell them to scratch them.
Yes, sir.
Right. Now let's go.
Look at that. They've got the nose on the run.
Yes.
And by the look of things, they'll have their throat on fire soon. I don't know how they got the gall.
I bet they have, I'm afraid. And the bile, and the small intestines.
British swines! You are finished! You are doomed! You are...
Sir, are you all right?
I think so. What in hell's name was that?
Hi there, you limeys. Guess we got here just in time.
Yanks!
Sorry we had to do that, but we got official orders from the GP himself at 036 hours.
You mean you've...
That's right. We've dropped the antibiotic pill on bacteria. Wiped the whole lot of them out.
Look.
Oh, gosh.
So perish all diseases against the United States of Health. For we are the nameless fighters of the health service. Small in stature, but great in number. We are the men who have become not just a byword in hospitals, but a way of life. Men who fight for what they believe to be right. It takes guts to get inside people's stomachs. You get no thanks, little encouragement. And yet we will never die, for our fight goes on. Wherever a measle is left to threaten humanity. And remember...
We kill 99% of all known Germans.
This is me telling you this is still the Half Open University. Now for some news of Half Open University publications, available for just a few pence. To biology students, we recommend Teach Yourself How to Dissect... by Arthur Sproat, parts 1 and 2. Parts 3 and 4 of Mr. Sproat will be published shortly. Also available, Trees in Autumn, a special loose leaf edition. Invertebrates, hardback, and Invertebrates, no back at all. Firth of Forth, Before the Great Railway Engineers, unabridged. Finally, for those of you who haven't had time to finish The Killing of the Smallpox Virus, we may as well tell you... it was Louis Pasteur who done it. Now part 3 of our course in acoustic wave propagation for Unit 5 of D Block at St. Mary's Hospital, Chiselwick, from Ada and all the kids at 47A. Professor Einstein speaks first.
Good evening. At this point, I want to look at sound. Unfortunately, I can't, so I shall have to listen to it instead. In particular, we're going to hear the sounds made by particular objects. First, we listen to a plane going faster than sound. There have been many clever inventions connected with sound, of course, but probably none is more famous than the one associated with the name of Alexander Graham Bell. Let's just refresh our memories about his celebrated experiment.
How are you getting on, Mr. Bell?
Well, if I'm right, this could be an historic turning point in the development of communications. Let's see.
At the third stroke, it will be an historic turning point in the development of communications.
Yes, you've guessed it. This is the half-open university. The repeat of that lecture on sound can be missed by remaining asleep at 4 o'clock next Monday morning on Radio 3. Regular listeners to Radio 3 shouldn't find this too difficult. Details of how to miss other broadcasts can be obtained by writing to the Half Open University Bookshop. Pens for writing to the Half Open University Bookshop can be obtained from your nearest stationer. Maps to find out where your nearest stationer is can be obtained from any map shop, priced at just a few pence. And now our course in interstellar vacuity. Professor Einstein doesn't speak first.
The universe, a vast, never-ending void of nothingness. As we gaze at the infinite star clusters of the galaxy, we know that we cannot be alone. And we ask ourselves the question that every man has asked over the years. Whoever they are, why do they always play the same damned piece of music?
This is the half-open, half-universal, the half-open university. Now for the second level of Unit 169 in our course in Experimental Chemico-Mechanics, Mechanico-Experimental Chemistry, and Exponential Mexican Chameleons. Professor Einstein speaks first.
Many aspects of engineering rely upon the physical properties of heat. Heat can be generated by a simple piece of apparatus such as the Bunsen burner, which is, of course, named after the famous person who invented it, Dr. Gustav Berner.
And yet, what exactly do we mean by heat? Half-open university lecturer Clifford Gannett carried out a short experiment to investigate the properties of fire.
Good evening. Well, I'm standing here inside a blazing furnace just to show you how hot fire can get. Now, there are flames roaring all around me, and you can take my word for it, it's pretty warm. In fact, my microphone's already beginning to melt here. I don't know if you can quite see that, and I believe that, yes, in fact, one of my feet has just been reduced to carbon. Well, within the next 4 or 5 minutes, I'm expecting to be completely burnt to a cinder. And then I think you'll be able to get some idea of what we're talking about when we say that fire is hot. Clifford Gannett, half of the university, 5,000 degrees centigrade.
Thank you, the late Dr. Clifford Gannett. Charred samples of Dr. Gannett. For analysis, are available from the Half Open University bookshop, priced at just a few pence. Well, to end our investigation, we turn to chemistry, gases and elements.
Different gases have different densities. Here is a gas which is lighter than air. And here is one which is heavier than air.
And now, can you guess what this gas is? That's right, air.
All right. So now we come to a rather more complicated experiment into the sciences of teratology, or how to make monsters. The equipment you'll need is already listed in your literature. One rambling, moss-covered castle on the moor, a thunderstorm, and a disfigured dwarf. All of which can be bought for just a few pence. Right, are you ready? Good. Now I want all you students to go through the experiment with us.
You wanted to see me, Baron Frankenstein?
Yes, come in, Igor.
Thank you.
Oh, I see you've lost the limp in your left leg.
Yes.
You're walking normally again.
No, I've got a limp in my right leg as well.
Well, so long as your other three legs are okay, we've nothing to worry about. Now then, I've called you in because I'm at last ready to inject life into my new creation. I've spent 3 years collecting the pieces to put him together. Look at him. Isn't he magnificent? He has the heart of an ape, the liver of an ape, the kidneys of an ape, and the brain of Anthony Wedgwood Benn.
If you didn't manage to get the brain of Anthony Wedgwood Benn at home, just leave it out. It won't make any difference.
Yes. All I need now is just one more part of the body, Igor. A part without which this man would never be the same. Igor, I must ask you to provide me with that part.
You don't mean...
Yes. The bolt from out of your neck.
Oh, very well, then. You can have that.
There. I told you it was of no use to you.
But it was...
Nonsense. What good was it? Pull yourself together, man. Open the window. I'm now about to begin the final operation. Now is the moment. When the moon is full and the storm rages, I shall harness the lightning, channel its pulsating energy into the inert body I have molded from the dust. And then, I shall give birth to a monster.
Perhaps we'd better just go over that bit again in case you didn't catch it. You'll notice that this system differs from the normal method of childbirth in that... As a rule, maternity wards do not use lightning of any kind. In fact, the method employed here by Baron Frankenstein depends largely upon Nutter's insanity principle, which states that any person creating a monster is entirely round the twist. The reverse is, of course, also true. Twist the round entirely is monster a creating person any. Anyway, I hope you're all keeping up with the experiment at home because the most important part is just coming up.
Look, he's opening his mouth. He's going to speak.
I've got a splitting headache.
In that case, I shall remove the axe from your head. Now, Igor, the final test.
The final test.
To make sure he is emotionally sound, bring in the girl.
Yes, Baron.
With this beautiful young maiden, we shall test your sexual responses.
What in the name of God is that horrible, ghastly monster?
Never you mind.
Oh, it speaks, too.
Less of your impertinence, girl. Igor, take her clothes off.
Yes, right in my hand.
And don't ever let me catch you wearing them again.
Sorry.
Now then, bring her over to the marble slab.
No, let me go.
Right, my monster. I think you know what to do.
I understand, doctor.
Well, we'll leave the rest of that experiment as an exercise for you at home. To measure your own monster's emotional responses, you'll need a notepad, pencil, and a steel tape measure.
In that half-open university broadcast, you heard Nigel Rees, Christopher Emmett, Timothy Davis, and Christine O'Zam. The research was written up by Andrew Marshall, John Mason, and David Renwick, and the program was produced by Simon Brett, who can be purchased for just a few pence.